1230 AM, W255DN, Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This week on Viewpoints.
My nine-year-old, you know, she's like very expressive child, and she was very expressive in her grief, sobbing on the floor, like very physically exhaustive.
Whether you're 9 or 90, grief is a complicated emotion that we all feel at some point. Then,
for every meal a food bank, like the food depository, provides, SNAP provides the equivalent of 9 meals.
In part 2 of our series, we look at the solutions and safety nets that help put food on the table for millions of Americans. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback, I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
At Charmin, we heard you shouldn't talk about going to the bathroom in public, so we decided to sing about it.
Light a candle, pour some wine. Grab a roll, the soft kind for a little me time. Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear. Wavy edges for my rear. So let the softness caress your soul. Just relax, you're on a roll. Let her rip. Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear.
Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear has the same softness you love. Now with wavy edges that tear better than the leading one-ply brand. Enjoy the go with Charmin.
Grief isn't always loud. In children and teens, it can look like slipping grades or sudden bursts of anger or hyperactivity. Using national data from 2023, in the U.S., about 1 in 12 children will experience the death of a parent or sibling before they turn 18. In this situation, one of the big challenges that caregivers run into is finding the right kind of help that doesn't make the situation worse.
I think there's this appropriately self-focused attitude with children that is appropriate developmentally, but when it comes to grief, then it's their fault, and they'll find a way how that death was their fault, and they can really internalize that if it's not processed.
That's Natasha Daniels, a child therapist who specializes in treating grief, anxiety, and obsessive compulsive disorder. A CDC study published last year found that nearly half of children in America with a diagnosed mental or behavioral disorder didn't get the care they needed. Most often, this is because of long wait lists to be seen, high medical costs, or not having access to the right kind of provider nearby. As a therapist, Daniels is familiar with these barriers to care and also draws from her own personal experience navigating grief and seeking help for her children.
My husband was a healthy 42-year-old. He got injured at work and had to have Achilles tendon surgery, very minor outpatient, and he was just recovering at home a few days later and went to bed and never woke up and died of a blood clot, we found out later. So I, at the time, this was about 3 years ago at this point, and my kids were 9, 11, and 18. So to have that sudden death, death is hard no matter what, but I think the suddenness of not having the ability to process a loss or see it coming was even harder to handle. My nine-year-old, she's not nine now, she's 12, but you know, she's like very expressive. She is a very expressive child, and she was very expressive in her grief, you know, sobbing on the floor, like very physically exhaustive for my grief, you know, that she was very like outward. My son, very much aligned with his personality, was everything was fine. There's not a problem. He wasn't an issue. He was hyperactive, which he normally isn't. And so I was kind of like, what is going on with him? But I think he didn't know what to do with all this energy, all this like the sadness in the house.
On the other hand, her eldest daughter, who was about to turn 18, reacted much differently. Instead of slowing down, she threw herself into overdrive mode and stayed busy cooking meals, cleaning, and trying to hold herself together.
I had to really put her back in line and say, you're still a teenager, go out with your friends, you're going to college, like this is not your burden, let's process this, let's, you've had a loss too, let's talk about this.
Daniels could see the weight that her daughter was carrying. Her training as a therapist gave her tools to step in, but most parents or guardians don't have that kind of background. For families who feel lost, She recommends starting with the basics. Reach out to local grief support groups. Look into therapists who work with children or teens. And keep your child's school in the loop.
I do feel like giving your kids an opportunity to say, like, these are all the tools and resources we have for you, and then honoring what resonates with them. And so I was very fortunate to find Billy's Place, which is a grief support group in Phoenix, Arizona, that deals with like immediate loss, like a parent or a sibling. And I said to my kids, just try it 3 times. And actually Billy's Place was like that too. They're like, just give it, you know, we ask that you try 3 times. And I appreciate that because I would do that in my therapy too. I'd say, hey, I know you don't want to come to therapy, but give me, you know, 3 sessions. And if you still feel that way, I'll 100% honor that. And so 2 out of my 3 kids decided that the support groups weren't for them. And my youngest, she was there for like over a year.
And grief rarely follows a linear path. For some, the effects bubble up right away. For others, they might not appear until months or even years later. Age, personality, and developmental stage all factor into how this reactive emotion shows up.
With kids, they hit a different developmental stage, or they have like now their brain is firing at a different level and they have a new awareness, or they have a memory that at this stage of life, they can reflect differently on it, or something triggers them and they process that grief all over again. And so sometimes when they're little, they don't process grief until they're, you know, 5 years later when they can really like experience that loss.
For Daniels, her grief wasn't just emotional, but it showed up in her body through chest tightness, sleepless nights, bone-deep exhaustion, and a constant brain fog. Even years later, this ache hasn't disappeared. Experts warn that when grief is left unacknowledged, the costs can be steep. The American Psychiatric Association reports that about 1 in 10 bereaved people develop prolonged grief disorder, a condition linked to higher risk of suicide, substance abuse, and physical illness. For children, those dangers are compounded. Unresolved grief can derail academic performance, development, and change how they view themselves and their future. It's also worth remembering that grief isn't always about death. Kids and teens can also mourn changes to their own life.
A lot of times we want to swoop in and fix it. You know, we want to make it better. And really the biggest gift we can give our kids is validation that it hurts and that there is a time for grieving, you know, grieving a friendship, grieving a new teacher and an old teacher leaving, or grieving the change that sometimes I think it's just our intuition to go in there and cheerlead and be like, but look at this other thing that's happening. It's going to be so great. And it is helpful to sit in the discomfort with your child and say, I'm sorry, I know this is hard and I know it is sad. And how can we honor this? Can we write a letter to the teacher? Or can we write a letter to your friend that left? Or is there an action that we can do that can be somewhat healing?
To learn more about this topic, links to additional resources and our guest, Natasha Daniels, head to viewpointsradio.org. This story was written by our executive producer, Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Gary Price.
Coming up, food insecurity isn't just about hunger. It's about the systems and resources that keep millions afloat when Viewpoints returns.
I'm still going for it, even with higher stroke risk from atrial fibrillation and a regular heartbeat not caused by a heart valve problem. Over a 3-year study, Eliquis apixaban tablets reduced stroke risk better than warfarin, and over 97% of Eliquis patients did not experience a stroke. A first stroke occurred in 2.9% of warfarin patients versus 2.3% of Eliquis patients.
Don't stop prescription Eliquis without asking your doctor. Stroke risk may increase. Eliquis can cause serious and potentially fatal bleeding. Don't take if you have an artificial heart valve, abnormal bleeding, or antiphospholipid syndrome. While taking, you may bruise more easily or bleed longer. A spinal injection increases blood clot risk, which may cause paralysis. Get medical help right away for unexpected bleeding or bruising, or back pain, tingling, numbness, muscle weakness, or incontinence. Aspirin products, NSAIDs, SSRIs, SNRIs, and blood thinners increase bleeding risk. Tell your doctor about planned medical or dental procedures. Learn more at Eliquis.com or call 1-855-ELIQUIS.
With Progressive's Name Your Price tool, you get coverage options based on how much you want to pay for car insurance. And then you decide how to spend the rest of your money, because you're in charge. Today, you're going to pay down your credit card bill. But you decide when you'll pay it.
Before the due date, so those interest charges don't get you.
But you decide if you pay it in full.
But you definitely should, because again, interest charges.
With Progressive's Name Your Price tool, we'll help you find coverage at a fair price. And then, you're in charge. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
That's the sound of James adding long-lasting Gain scent boosters to his laundry this morning. Several hours later, James sniffs the irresistible scent of Gain on his shirt. Ah, Gain. Several hours later, James has even caught the attention of his mother-in-law, and she never gives him attention.
Ooh, you smell amazing, James.
Oh, thanks, Mom. I love you, too.
I never said that.
Add Gain scent boosters to your laundry. Add joy to your day.
Last week, we heard from two sources about what it feels like to live with food insecurity and its effect on daily life. This week, we shift our focus to two organizations that are helping people put food on their table. As prices for everything remain high, the need has grown. A family of four with two parents and two children that have an income of about $32,000 a year fall below the poverty level. According to the latest U.S. Census, about 13% of households, or 17 million families nationwide, meet this criteria and get government assistance. This can mean food credits, discounted health insurance, housing subsidies, and other resources. But there's another, much larger group who earn just above the poverty level and are also chronically struggling to get by. United for Alice, a national research initiative, defines this population as the working poor. They're employed and often holding down multiple jobs, but what they make doesn't stretch far enough to cover rent, healthcare, food, and other basic living costs. By Alice's measure, 42% of U.S. households today fall into this class.
Alice is someone that we all know, but perhaps not by name, and Alice is an acronym. Asset limited, income constrained, employed. So if we start just thinking about the workers that we know that we rely on a daily basis, childcare workers, home health aides, delivery drivers, bank tellers, security guards, folks that we need to keep our economy running smoothly, yet struggle to support their own families.
That's Stephanie Hoops, the national director of United for Alice. Hoops gets into how the current system goes against working people who earn just above the federal poverty level.
They're still struggling, but they're not eligible for things like SNAP and TANF and some of the most common government programs. So as a result, they are limited to basically nonprofit programs that don't have income requirements. And probably the most common of those are food banks and food pantries.
To provide some context, she breaks down how the government calculated the federal poverty level and who gets these benefits when the system was created back in the 1960s.
At the time, there was a consensus that food should be a third of your budget. So they calculated what it costs to feed a family of four and multiplied it by three. And literally, that number has been ticked up by the Consumer Price Index ever since. And it's the same number across the country, so it doesn't reflect the variation, you know, the difference in cost of living from Manhattan to Mississippi, from Indiana to Texas. And so that's out of kilter, but also it hasn't adjusted to what you really need to live and work in the modern economy.
This often includes a working phone, car, and other items. These are all extra costs that weren't factored into the original calculation that was set 60 years ago. Often, these items take priority in order for people to keep working and living, so other essentials, like buying healthy, nutritious foods, get cut. On the ground, food pantries are seeing this shift in recent years as already tight budgets become even tighter.
We all know that the price of housing and groceries and just the general cost of living is elevated right now. And so having enough to put food on the table for your family is a challenge for a lot of households. So if asked to pinpoint a specific demographic that we serve, it's really impossible because so often it's anyone. A lot of people are surprised that sometimes it's their neighbors. It's somebody they don't necessarily anticipate being food insecure, but it is currently impacting 1 in 5 households in the Chicago metro area that experience food insecurity. And when we talk about households with children, that number goes down to 1 in 4.
That's Cameron Mattson, the communications manager at the Greater Chicago Food Depository. The organization supplies food for food banks, soup kitchens, shelters, and other programs across the Chicagoland area. They also have a team that helps people in need apply for resources they qualify for, like the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, known as SNAP. And this need has grown. Last year, the Greater Chicago Food Depository and its partners served 2.4 million households. That's 64% more visitors than in 2021.
Of the 2.4 million households visits we had in 2024, about 13% each month were households coming for the first time. And so, yeah, there's, again, I think it's just the challenges of finances that are bringing people in that haven't necessarily needed to use these resources in the past.
And behind the scenes, keeping shelves stocked to meet this demand is another challenge. In 2024, Mattson says the depository purchased almost 40% of the food it provided to its network. This was possible through supporter donations. The second largest funding source was from the government.
Another 28% of our food came from the federal government via the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And then the remaining 33% was donated by food distributors and manufacturers or rescued from food retailers. And so it's really this kind of three-pronged source of food that we have that provides what we need to get to our neighbors and feed this vast network.
While the Greater Chicago Food Depository serves millions each year, it's one part of a larger resource network. Mattson says food banks can't replace the support the government provides through food assistance programs like SNAP. If this federal funding is cut, much of the burden will fall back on individual states.
Historically, SNAP benefits were 100% federally funded, and Illinois, for example, could be required to pay up to $800 million annually to keep SNAP available for our neighbors. And so obviously most states are not equipped to bridge this gap. And as much as food banks like ours want to help, we just don't have the scale for this. Because for every meal a food bank like the Food Depository provides, SNAP provides the equivalent of 9 meals. So the need that will be created with some of these reductions is more than we're equipped to handle.
While federal programs like SNAP are the backbone of food assistance, Hoops highlights how some states, schools, and other local nonprofits are stepping up with creative solutions to help families in need.
We're seeing some great action across the country, all different kinds of stakeholders stepping up, good action at state and local governments. May 1st in Hawaii, the state legislature approved expanding free school meal access to cover more children and specifically to help ALIS families.
These kinds of programs can ease the strain for families in the short term. But Hoops feels that the bigger long-term picture is still troubling. The fragility of today's labor market leaves millions of households on shaky ground.
Of all adults in the U.S., only 22% have the security of a full-time salary job. And that means the rest are working hourly paid or part-time or looking for work or are out of the workforce. And I think that helps sum up the precarious nature of our economy right now.
The reality is sobering. But there are resources out there and ways to get involved. So where can households turn for help if they need it? Hoops says this is the best first step.
That's to dial 211 on your phone and connect to the reference and referral service that links you to resources that are in your community. So 211 is across the country, but when you call in from a location, it goes to the resources that are in that location. And it's run by United Ways and state governments across the country. And it's also available online. So you could go to 211.org. And that's probably the fastest way to be connected to things that meet your needs and fit your situation.
Beyond seeking help, there are also ways for listeners to support the fight against food insecurity. Food banks and nonprofits depend on volunteers, donations, and advocacy to keep shelves stocked and programs running. Even small contributions of time or resources can make a difference in your community. Looking ahead, food insecurity isn't just about empty pantries and fridges. It's about the constant trade-offs that individuals and families must make to survive. Local food banks and nonprofits are doing their part, but long-term progress depends on sustained investment and smart policy at every level of our government. To learn more about United for Alice and the Greater Chicago Food Depository, as well as our guests this week, Stephanie Hoops and Cameron Mattson, visit viewpointsradio.org. This segment was written by our executive producer, Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
Whoa, it's you, the Capital One Bank guy.
That's what they call me.
Mind if I get a selfie?
Yeah, sure thing. Say no fees or minimums on your Capital One checking account.
Wow, that's a keeper. So, where are you heading?
I'm off to spread the good news that Capital One helps people keep more money in their wallet with no overdraft fees.
Oh, you're the best Capital One Bank guy.
Hey, mind if I get a selfie?
Sure.
Say, Capital One, what's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One N.A. member FDIC.
It's a classic odor tale. You fried fish for dinner, cleaned up, but the smell is still in the house. And the neighbors are coming over for game night. They're on their way. And then you spray Febreze Air Mist. Febreze Air starts working instantly to fight even your toughest odors, so you go from fish to fresh like that. Now all you have to worry about is Pam cheating at charades.
Breathe happy Febreze, la 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 la.
This is Viewpoints Explained. I'm Ebony McMorris. The country's report card recently came back, and it's not good news. High school reading scores have sunk to their lowest point in more than 30 years. Results from the National Assessment of Educational Progress, which is considered the nation's most reliable benchmark test, show that about a third of last year's seniors scored below basic reading proficiency. About 35% of students scored just proficient marks in reading. So what's behind the big drop? Experts say more students are regularly missing class since the pandemic, and this has led up to interrupted learning. Last year, a survey led by the National Assessment of Educational Progress showed that almost a quarter of fourth graders missed five or more days of school in the previous month. That's double the rate reported in 2019. On top of all this, more young people are spending several hours in front of screens. This leaves less time to read and makes it harder to sit down and focus for a long stretch of time. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, teens now spend an average of 7.5 hours a day on screens for entertainment, while kids age 8 to 12 log nearly 5 hours daily, not counting schoolwork. On the upside, some states are taking a proactive approach to teaching reading in order to turn things around. Research shows that teaching letters and sounds and precise logical sequences at an early age, like kindergarten and first grade, can help boost spelling, fluency, and understanding. For example, in Mississippi, schools are doing exactly this while also investing in extra teacher training and early intervention help for kids who seem to be struggling. The state, which used to rank near the bottom in reading scores, has now climbed to the top of early reading performance. At the end of the day, falling behind in reading limits a student's academic path and their success after high school. It also closes the door on an entirely different creative experience. Reading is an active way to step into other people's perspectives and lifetimes. It helps us learn new things and stay curious about the world. Without it, these things vanish and we're reliant on the passive role of watching screen after screen. That's Viewpoints Explained for this week. More in a moment.
Welcome to Culture Crash, where we examine what's new and old in entertainment. Fresh off her success with 2024's Short and Sweet, Sabrina Carpenter is right back at it in 2025 with her latest album, Man's Best Friend. Carpenter has taken some heat, online and in the press, for releasing two albums so close together, with some questioning how much artistic growth is really evident from last year to this year. The argument is that she's simply releasing more of the same to capitalize on a moment of celebrity. But that's not how I see it at all. Where Short and Sweet included four songs with writing and or production credits from Jack Antonoff, Man's Best Friend has nine such tracks. The work that Carpenter and Antonoff started in last year's Please, Please, Please is further built upon with the poppier Manchild, the Dolly Parton reminiscent ballad We Almost Broke Up Again Last Night, and the triumphantly rock-infused Goodbye. It feels like two artists who struck gold last year and wanted to continue working together to further explore their shared musical references and passions. I hear artistic growth all over Man's Best Friend, which serves as a powerful showcase of Carpenter's ability to pull from musical heroes across decades of pop music and tie them all together with her trademark lyrics full of clever turns of phrase and tongue-in-cheek double entendres. The album is a little bit ABBA, a little bit Christina Aguilera, and a little bit Donna Summer, reminiscent of Earth, Wind & Fire and also Ariana Grande. Soaked in Antonoff-led production that brings in elements of his band Bleachers and his musical heroes like Bruce Springsteen and the Beatles. Man's Best Friend is familiar and novel at the same time, and it absolutely demands to be danced to and sung along with. It's a supernova pop album in a year that was desperate for an injection of fun. I'm Evan Rook.
Do Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis symptoms keep coming back? Tremfya, guselkumab, may help, with rapid remission achieved at 12 weeks and lasting clinical remission at 1 year. Some even saw visible improvement of their intestinal lining at 12 weeks and 1 year. Tremfya is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with moderately to severely active Crohn's disease and adults with moderately to severely active ulcerative colitis. Serious allergic reactions and increased risk of infections and liver problems may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection, flu-like symptoms, or if you need a vaccine. Healing is possible with Tremfya. Approximately 3 out of 10 patients were in endoscopic remission at 1 year, based on areas visualized on colonoscopy, which may not represent the deeper bowel layer or entire GI tract. Individual results may vary. Ask your doctor about Tremfya today. Call 1-800-526-7736 to learn more or visit TremfyaRadio.com.
And that's Viewpoints for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows and find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints.
Are you passionate about local high school sports? So are we. WXCO 98.9 FM is proud to be the only station in Wausau bringing you live, play-by-play coverage of high school sports, game after game, season after season. But we can't do it alone. We are currently seeking local sponsors and community partners who believe in the power of sports to bring people together, inspire youth, and energize our hometown pride. Promote your business, support our local athletes, be heard by thousands of loyal local listeners. If your business is interested in supporting live sports broadcasts while gaining valuable exposure, now is the perfect time to become a WXCO sports sponsor. Message us on our Facebook page or call or text our sales rep, Aaliyah, at 608-573-1597. That's 608-573-1597. Let's keep Wausau High School sports on the air together.
We are the NFHS. That stands for the National Federation of State High School Associations. But really, what we stand for, together with the WIAA, are the 178,000 high school sports students in Wisconsin. And so we stand. We stand for the runners, soccer, and basketball players. We stand for their coaches, administrators, and officials. We stand for the swimmers, football players, and wrestlers. We stand for the golfers, softball, and volleyball players. We stand as the national leader and advocate for high school athletics and all who participate in them and make them possible. Because it is our purpose to ensure that high school students get to play, perform, and compete together. To learn more about who we are and what we stand for, visit nfhs.org.
This week on Viewpoints.
Instead of voters choosing their politicians, it's politicians choosing their voters.
What exactly is gerrymandering? And what's happening in Texas? Then,
I didn't always get the food that was necessary. Sometimes I had to go a little hungry because we just couldn't afford it for that day.
We cover the prolonged stress and impact of always struggling to afford the basics. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
Do Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis symptoms keep coming back? Tremfya, guselkumab, may help, with rapid remission achieved at 12 weeks and lasting clinical remission at 1 year. Some even saw visible improvement of their intestinal lining at 12 weeks and 1 year. Tremfya is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with moderately to severely active Crohn's disease and adults with moderately to severely active ulcerative colitis. Serious allergic reactions and increased risk of infections and liver problems may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection, flu-like symptoms, or if you need a vaccine. Healing is possible with Tremfya. Approximately 3 out of 10 patients were in endoscopic remission at 1 year, based on areas visualized on colonoscopy, which may not represent the deeper bowel layer or entire GI tract. Individual results may vary. Ask your doctor about Tremfya today. Call 1-800-526-7736 to learn more or visit TremfyaRadio.com.
In Texas, political maps are once again at the center of controversy. Late last month, Governor Greg Abbott signed a new congressional map into law, which will be used to elect members to the U.S. House of Representatives. Civil rights groups are arguing that the new map gives Republicans an unfair partisan advantage in the upcoming midterm elections and dilutes the voting power of certain communities. What Texas is being accused of is called gerrymandering, and if successful, this precedent could change elections forever.
Gerrymandering is when politicians manipulate voting district lines for their ability to entrench their power. And it often distorts election results and weakens accountability and often silences the voices of communities, particularly communities of color, young voters, working families.
That's Omar Noraldeen, Senior Vice President of Policy and Litigation for the grassroots organization Common Cause. He explains how there can be different drivers behind gerrymandering.
It could be partisan gerrymandering, which means the lines are drawn to entrench the power and ensure that candidates from, you know, the Republican Party or the Democratic Party are elected. But also there's racial gerrymandering, which is used to make sure that the voting power of, for example, Black communities isn't harnessed through their voting. And the lines are drawn in a way that splits up communities based on their racial identity.
In this recent case in Texas, Noraldeen says politicians are engaging in partisan gerrymandering since the updated voting districts are expected to add 5 additional Republican seats in the U.S. House. Another red flag is that the state is redrawing its voting map in the middle of the decade instead of waiting until after the census.
What the census is a counting of the number of people that, you know, live in the United States, and that's done every 10 years. People move from state to state, people move from city to city, and to ensure that our congressional districts, so these are the voting districts that elect members of Congress, are proportional to each other, have roughly the same amount of people, that the district lines within a state are drawn in a way that accounts for the voting power of communities of interest. So people that live together, work together, you know, view themselves as a cohesive community, that those communities, as people move, are kind of held together within single districts. And that happens every 10 years.
He adds that what Republican leaders in Texas are doing isn't illegal or unlawful. However, mid-decade redistricting is not standard practice and ignores crucial census data.
President Donald Trump has publicly supported the updated map, reinforcing the idea that redistricting serves Republican interests. After this, Democratic California Governor Gavin Newsom publicly floated a counterattack, suggesting his state redraw its maps to add 5 more Democratic House seats.
He and others, state leaders in the state, clarified that what they're doing is in response to Texas, and not just because Texas is doing it for Republicans and California is going to do it for Democrats, but what they're trying to achieve is national balance in the congressional maps. So to speak, in their words, to neutralize what Texas is doing so that President Trump doesn't have a Congress that is unaccountable.
Bruce Spiva is a senior vice president at the Campaign Legal Center, a nonprofit, nonpartisan group focused on voting rights. He explains the difference in how California is redistricting compared to Texas.
They have enacted a law that they said would be temporary through 2030, and that would only go into effect if Texas actually goes through with this plan. It would redistrict in California in a way that created 5 new Democratic districts. At least that's the intention. But they're, unlike Texas, they're going to put that before the people of California, who will get a chance to vote on whether that goes into effect or not.
In addition to Texas, states like New York, Illinois, and Maryland are also considering similar plans. However, some states have provisions in their constitutions that make mid-decade redistricting much more difficult. Currently, there's no sweeping federal law limiting gerrymandering.
So, for example, in Florida, Florida actually bans partisan gerrymandering as part of the Florida Constitution. So the way in which district lines are drawn in many states is by the state legislature. And so the state can pass laws to govern how the state legislature should do this. The other kind of check on this power is what's called independent redistricting. And there are different ways to conduct independent redistricting. One way is through independent redistricting commissions or citizen-led redistricting commissions. And so here it would be people who apply to be part of these redistricting commissions that actually draw the district lines rather than politicians.
There are plenty of ways to draw district maps unfairly, but what does it take to draw them in a way that accurately represents the political voice of communities? Map making is a complex science, but Spiva says there are some ways to tell whether a district has been gerrymandered or not.
If you have a state that's split 50-50 among, say, Democrats and Republicans, generally, half of the seats ought to go to Republicans and half ought to go to Democrats. It's not going to be perfect. You have wave elections and sometimes it's candidate quality or whatever. But, you know, over time, roughly, you would expect it to be about like that. And often what we've seen with partisan gerrymandering is you have a 50-50 state, take like Wisconsin, where the Republicans who did the partisan gerrymandering there control an overwhelming majority of the delegation, you know, way more than 50%. Also, there are traditional redistricting criteria, such as compactness, so the district doesn't spread out all over the state. And it's not a constitutional principle, but it's something that is considered a standard, that districts be contiguous, you know, that you don't put one part of the district here and then skip over a big geographic area and put another part over here.
In the case of Texas, this sudden off-cycle gerrymandering has given Republicans an advantage heading into next year's midterms, which traditionally are more challenging for a sitting president and their corresponding political party. Lawsuits have been filed in an attempt to block the updated map from taking effect, but if it passes, Spiva believes it will set a dangerous new precedent that undercuts voting rights and democracy.
The implications are that the people's voice is really taken away, right? I mean, because essentially politicians are choosing their voters and can keep themselves in office, even if there was a groundswell among people in their former districts to get rid of them. I think immediate implications is it also, and this is the intention, it insulates the president from the typical Democratic, again, small d, Democratic check that the midterm elections pose for all presidents of all parties, right? I mean, it's almost always the case in a president's first term, or in this case, the second term, but not back to back with his first term, the president in power loses seats in Congress. Almost always the case. It happened with Barack Obama. It happened with George W. Bush. It happened with Bill Clinton. And so what we need in this country is we need national legislation.
To find out more about Omar Noureldin, Bruce Spiva, and all our featured guests, visit viewpointsradio.org. For more behind the scenes, follow us at Viewpoints Radio on X, Facebook, and Instagram. This segment was written and produced by Grace Galante. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Studio production by Jason Dickey. I'm Gary Price.
Coming up, one in seven households in the U.S. are food insecure, and this number is growing when Viewpoints returns.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback, I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Oh, no.
Ah, that's the sound of someone who's misplaced...
My debit card.
Their debit card.
Where did I leave that thing?
Not at the gas pump, or the checkout counter, or the roof of your car. Now, if he has the Chase mobile app, he can use Card Lock.
Wait, I could just lock my card.
Yep, just a few tippy taps on his phone and... That sound? That's peace of mind from Chase.
Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank N.A., member FDIC.
I can't believe how spotless my floors look after using the Swiffer Power Mop. No more dragging around a heavy mop and messy bucket. Now I get the same deep clean without all the work. Thanks to the powerful solution and scrubbing pad of the Swiffer Power Mop, dirt and grime don't stand a chance, and I don't break a sweat. Mic drop. I mean, mop drop. Swiffer Power Mop. Swiffer Power Mop. A smarter way to mop. Try it or your money back.
Y'all ready for Gillette's best shave? Try Gillette Labs with 5 ultra-thin blades, a built-in exfoliating bar, a precision trimmer on the back for sharp lineups. Gillette Labs delivers that smooth shave. Plus, and check this out, with one refill, you'll get up to 30 shaves. And on average, the blades last 50% longer than Gillette Fusion. Got something special coming up and you gotta look good? Check out Gillette Labs, the best a man can get. Gillette Labs also available in heated.
Imagine scrubbing floors, washing windows, and then cleaning for several more hours. At the end of the day, you receive $200, and half of this money goes towards groceries for your family. But that $100 that once stretched a week or two now disappears in days. For Veronique Valdez, a high school student living in Las Vegas, Nevada, this is a weekly predicament. Her mom cleans houses for a living, and she often helps as well. In their eyes, food isn't just priced in dollars. It's priced in hours of labor, and lately the hours never stretch far enough. The U.S. Department of Agriculture reports that overall food prices have risen by more than 25% since 2020. And while inflation has slowed, wages haven't kept up for many families. For Valdez, she comes from a separated family where money's always been tight.
I grew up not being able to get, you know, a lot of things. It was either choosing between eating food or like having like either groceries or like a sweet little treat. And sometimes I didn't always get the food that was necessary. Sometimes I had to go a little hungry because we just couldn't afford it for that day. I was temporarily homeless, living in a car with my father.
Today, Valdez is a senior in high school and is looking forward to college. She's a member of the Boys and Girls Club of Southern Nevada, a nonprofit that provides a safe space for kids and teens in between school and home. The organization is a national initiative that provides educational support, extracurricular activities, mentorship, and more. For Valdez, it's what kept her on track despite all of the ups and downs happening at home.
I didn't get the experience of having a mother-in-law because she was always working. She was always struggling to pay for the rent, pay for the food, And it affected me a lot mentally, seeing how much my mother had to work to provide for me. It did leave a lot on my conscience. I felt very guilty. I was raised to never ask for anything. Never, if I saw a cute toy or something shiny, like I would just have to observe and walk away because I knew asking would also hurt my mother because she knew she couldn't give me the things that I wanted.
According to the Census Bureau, nearly 37 million Americans lived in poverty in 2023. About one in seven households were food insecure, meaning they lacked reliable access to affordable, nutritious food. For Valdez and her mom, the rise in grocery bills has led to a lot of worry and uncertainty.
We'll go to the store, right? The total is like $35 for like a few things that we needed. And generally, we needed a lot more, but we just couldn't afford it because those $35 cost me over 2 hours of hard cleaning and work. And it's like, that's kind of how we view things. Every time we go to the store or everything, it's like, okay, how many hours of work do I have to go to make up this money? And the number just keeps getting higher and higher. And it's been so dreadful. Like, we have to cut back on a lot of expenses. Like, for example, like I've been needing clothing for like a good minute, and we've been unable to because like it's becoming so expensive to just get the essential things that we needed.
And their story reflects what's happening across the country. An expert on this issue is Jean-Martin Bauer, Director of Food Security and Nutrition Analysis at the United Nations World Food Program. He's also the author of the book, The New Breadline: Hunger and Hope in the 21st Century.
About 18 million households in the U.S. suffer from food insecurity. I hasten to add that food insecurity measured by USDA in the U.S. is a very different phenomenon to what we measure internationally, but it still means that people are consuming less food, they're eating less preferred foods, and they don't know where their next meal is coming from. And that's a problem that's getting worse in the U.S. right now. I'd like to highlight the fact that food security is very dynamic. It changes from year to year. It changes according to the geography you're in, according to the social group you're in. It's a problem that needs to be understood, tracked, talked about. It's also a very uncomfortable problem. And maybe that's why it's so difficult to tackle it head on. It's uncomfortable because it's about inequalities, it's about injustice, it's about disparities that break along racial lines.
The drivers behind this problem aren't new. Prices for everything have climbed and stayed high while pandemic-era safety nets and other resources have been pulled back.
Those organizations like food banks that need to be able to do is cater for the increased demand. They are at the front line. That's the place people go to first when they're in trouble. And the food banks, but also all the other components of the safety nets we have in this country, they need to be strengthened. We need to boost them rather than curtail them at a time of high inflation.
For instance, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, remains the country's largest nutrition assistance program. Yet these benefits haven't kept up with inflation. Last year, according to the Department of Agriculture, more than 41 million Americans, or 12% of the country, received SNAP benefits each month.
There's a fear that the safety net is being pulled back or could be pulled back in the future. The 18 million households in the US that suffer from food insecurity might need more assistance. We need to make sure that these programs, again, upgrade the transfers, the resources, the support they provide to families in need. And that's, again, keeping up with inflation is the basic thing that SNAP should be doing right now. But then you have an impact on those families that are suffering from food insecurity right now. It's a traumatic experience. It's something that impacts families, not just in the moment where they experience food insecurity, but for over the long term. There is an impact of the stress you experience when you go through food security. It's not just the hunger you feel. It's the, again, the prolonged stress. It's not good for children. It's not good for the individuals that live through it.
This prolonged worry around food and where the next meal will come from is something that Valdez is all too familiar with. For her, the Boys and Girls Club of Southern Nevada was a supportive safety net that she and her mom could fall back on.
My mom had no one to lean on. She didn't know who to lean on, and it was a little difficult. But like I said, thanks to the organization, I was given a lot of resources and a lot of experiences and a lot of support that me and my mom really needed.
For Valdez and her mother, food insecurity means years of sacrifice and worry. For Bauer, it's a national and global challenge that threatens stability itself.
There's also an impact on the communities that are exposed to hunger. Hunger is a threat to social cohesion, put simply. That means neighbors getting along. It means us being able to live as people who trust each other. Hunger is food is an essential need. It's something we all need every day, multiple times a day. We need to eat. And when you don't get that, it undermines the very fabric of society. An essential promise of a functional society is that people's basic needs are satisfied. Food, water, shelter. If you threaten those, all bets are off.
With millions struggling to put food on the table, the question is whether we'll strengthen current safety nets or allow one of our most basic needs to slip further out of reach. Join us for part two of this story next week. To find out more about this topic and our guests, Veronique Valdez and Jean-Martin Bauer, head to viewpointsradio.org. This segment was written by our executive producer, Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson. This segment is sponsored by Capital One. Banking with Capital One helps you keep more money in your wallet with no fees or minimums on checking accounts and no overdraft fees. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One N.A. Member FDIC.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
Moms and dads, do you wish you could know where your kids' shoes are at all times? Now you can with Skechers' newest Apple AirTag compatible sneakers, Find My Skechers. It's the latest genius invention from Skechers, the comfort technology company. With Find My Skechers, there's a clever hidden AirTag compartment under the shoe's insole. You just pull up the insole and pop in the AirTag. It's sleek, secure, and your child can't feel it or see it. Then you can check where your kids' shoes are on the Find My app. Imagine that. Just one look at the phone and you can see where your kids' shoes are. No more wondering or worrying. It's as easy as that. Plus, they're machine washable and durable, so they're long-lasting. And Find My Skechers are available for boys and girls. Look, we all know Skechers is famous for comfort. And now they're giving us comfort of mind when it comes to our kids. Get Find My Skechers, Skechers' newest Apple AirTag compatible sneakers at Skechers.com, a Skechers store near you, or wherever kids' shoes are sold. Apple AirTag sold separately.
This is Viewpoints Explained. I'm Ebony McMorris. Americans are drinking less, and young people are driving this trend. A new Gallup poll out last month reports that 54% of U.S. adults say they drink alcohol. This is the lowest percentage since the survey began in 1939. More than half of Americans now believe even more moderate drinking is bad for you, up from less than a third just a few years ago. Among younger adults, this change is even sharper. Only about half of people under 35 drink today, compared to much higher levels in the past. And roughly two-thirds of that age group now say moderate drinking isn't healthy. Go younger and teens, only 7% report drinking in the past month, according to the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. So what's behind this big shift? Health is one big factor. Gen Z and millennials are more likely to prioritize mental clarity and relaxation. And there are more options today to do just that, from creative mocktails to wellness drinks like a CBD or hemp seltzer. More communities are also creating spaces where people can socialize without the pressure to drink. Instead of meeting up for a boozy brunch or happy hour, many gatherings now center on coffee, a fun activity, an exercise class, or simply time outside. For many, it's less about cutting alcohol out completely and more about making intentional choices about when and where to drink. The bottom line, drinking is no longer the default, and the next generation is redefining this long-held ritual. That's Viewpoints Explained for this week. More in a moment.
Welcome to Culture Crash, where we examine what's new and old in entertainment. Since its launch in late 2019, I've struggled to wrap my arms around what exactly Apple TV Plus is. Of course, I know it's the TV and streaming hub for one of the 10 biggest companies in the world, but its general lack of promotion has always confused me. Sometimes I will see a rare poster for a new show on Apple, and I'll be left to wonder if it's real or if it's a screenshot from an SNL bit or something. But once you actually do turn the service on, you tend to see big stars, simple concepts, and huge budgets. Apple shows like Ted Lasso, Shrinking, Presumed Innocent, and The Studio have managed to bring eyeballs and award season success to the tech giant, and their slate for fall 2025 looks promising as well. The show I'm most excited for is Pluribus, a science fiction series from Breaking Bad creator Vince Gilligan, starring Ray Seahorn, who stole many hearts, including my own, as Kim Wexler on the incredible Breaking Bad spinoff Better Call Saul. Details of Pluribus are scarce, but the show is set to premiere on November 7th, and Gilligan and Seahorn are more than enough to sell me on a new project. Before then, though, Apple TV Plus will premiere The Savant, starring Oscar-winning actress Jessica Chastain, about a digital interrupter who seeks to infiltrate hate groups on the internet to prevent public attacks. The crime thriller comes from Melissa James Gibson, a playwright with experience writing for The Americans and House of Cards. On October 10th, Apple will launch The Last Frontier, which stars Jason Clarke in a thriller about a U.S. Marshal and the remote wilderness of Alaska. This fall, Apple will also stream Mr. Scorsese, a documentary series about Martin Scorsese, and Down Cemetery Road, an adaptation of the thriller novel of the same name, starring Ruth Wilson and Emma Thompson. Will all of these shows be good? Who's to say? But true to the Apple TV Plus formula, they promise huge names in familiar situations, and that's enough for me to at least check out what they're cooking over there at the computer company. I'm Evan Rook.
My perfect day has sand, salt water, and friends. But my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can take me out of the moment. Now I'm all in with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi. Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, most people saw 90% clearer skin, and many were even 100% plaque-free at 4 months. Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin. And that means everything. Nothing is everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
That's Viewpoints for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows and find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints.
I'm Chad Holmes, joining myself and former Wausau West High School head football coach Jason Foster every Wednesday night from 6 until 8 p.m. for the Big High School Sports Show on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Each week, we will review and preview the high school football action around Central Wisconsin, plus special guests. Each week, we will talk to an area head football coach about their team and also bring on a student athlete to talk about their athletics and off the field as well. The Big High School Sports Show, each and every Wednesday night from 6 until 8 p.m. on Central Wisconsin's radio home for high school sports, 98.9 WXCO. Online at WXCO.fm. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. And don't forget, you can catch a podcast of every week's show at WXCO.fm. Also on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you passionate about local high school sports? So are we. WXCO 98.9 FM is proud to be the only station in Wausau bringing you live, play-by-play coverage of high school sports, game after game, season after season. But we can't do it alone. We are currently seeking local sponsors and community partners who believe in the power of sports to bring people together, inspire youth, and energize our hometown pride. Promote your business, support our local athletes, be heard by thousands of loyal local listeners. If your business is interested in supporting live sports broadcasts while gaining valuable exposure, now is the perfect time to become a WXCO sports sponsor. Message us on our Facebook page or call or text our sales rep, Aaliyah, at 608-573-1597. That's 608-573-1597. Let's keep Wausau High School sports on the air together.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Thousands of people are expected to pack the stadium that's home to the NFL's Arizona Cardinals for a memorial service for Charlie Kirk today. President Trump will speak this afternoon, as will Secretary of State Marco Rubio.
I admired all the stuff he said and did on campuses. I think he had an enormous influence on young people. I think we actually need more of that dialogue and discourse.
The EPA has reportedly told some of its scientists to stop publishing almost all of their research. CBS's Tracy Wolf.
According to reporting from the Washington Post, members of the EPA's Office of Water were told during a town hall meeting to stop work on research papers unless it had already completed the final step of the publication process.
White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt tells Fox a deal's been made to sell TikTok to a consortium of large American companies.
There will be 7 seats on the board that controls the app in the United States, and 6 of those seats will be Americans.
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.